This is Ecotopia on KZFR. I'm Stephen Schutte. Last week, we shared some news items that we had filed away, not able to include them as full-fledged programs.
I'm Susan Schutte. The stories we'll read tonight cover a wide range of environmental issues. Believe it or not, there's some good news about the environment, along with the bad that we hear about so frequently. Without being Pollyannish, we'll give you a balance.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Neil Yelland, a financial advisor with Edward Jones in Chico. No matter where you are in life's journey, Neil can offer guidance and strategies for wealth and retirement income, college savings accounts, estate and legacy plans, charitable giving, and more. For a consultation or more information, you can reach Neil at 530-345-8913. He's on the corner of 3rd Avenue and the Esplanade. Neil Yelland, Edward Jones member, SIPC. And we're supported by Payroll Plus. Owner Dolly Wendell and her staff provide payroll, workers' comp, group health insurance, employee benefits, and human resources management services consistent with ever-changing employee compliance and tax laws. Dolly at Payroll Plus can be reached at 566-0452. And we'll remind you that coming up after Ecotopia today will be a one-week delayed interview with Jimmy Brobeck on North State Give and Take.
The opinions expressed on this program do not reflect the opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. June 5th marked World Environmental Day, a great occasion to raise environmental awareness and encourage action on urgent planetary issues. Today is a continuation of last week's show on the good news and the bad news. We'll continue with a column from Mike.com, which provided a weekly look at good news. The editor introduced it, acknowledging that these are small changes, saying, if we don't look at those, we'll burn out. So we have to take the small changes and hope for a better future. The world is not yet a lost cause. Australia elected a climate-conscious prime minister. For more than a decade, Australia has been under the leadership of the country's Conservative Party, which has failed to take climate change seriously. That inaction led to a revolt at the ballot box last week, as voters across the country led a green wave by electing Prime Minister Anthony Albanese, who has pledged to address the ongoing climate crisis. The vote in Australia isn't just a major win for the country, which is now aggressively targeting carbon reduction with plans to cut emissions nearly in half by the end of the decade, but a win for environmentalism as a whole. Candidates can run on climate change and win. Voters understand that it's an existential threat. The key, of course, is that politicians actually make good on their promises.
Other pretty good news. Heat pumps, a massive improvement over air conditioning, have gotten a boost. The world is getting hotter, which means we need to try harder to stay cool. But air conditioning can contribute to climate change due to its massive energy use. There's an alternative, though, heat pumps, which are way more efficient and can cut down on cooling emissions. A new safety standard issued by the International Electrotechnical Commission will make heat pumps even better by approving the use of climate-friendly refrigerants. And America is about to go all in on heat pumps, too. A new bill will increase domestic production and offer major tax breaks for homeowners to adopt them. Combined, this could put a major dent in our greenhouse gas emissions, especially as we increasingly rely on artificial cooling to keep us safe from the heat.
This is kind of a good news, bad news story. Exxon is the bad news. The good news is they will go on trial over covering up climate change. Exxon knew about the effects that burning fossil fuels would have on the planet and covered it up. Now it'll have to stand trial for the crime. This week, a Massachusetts, and this is the week of May 23rd, this week, a Massachusetts court ruled that a lawsuit against Exxon brought by the state's attorney general can move forward. A number of legal challenges have been brought against Exxon, but this case moving forward is a big deal. It opens Exxon up to the discovery process, during which state investigators can request documents and other information from the company. Regardless of how the lawsuit resolves, it should allow the public to learn much more about exactly how much Exxon knew and when it knew it.
Other good news is that activist investors have scored wins inside fossil fuel companies. Investors in both Exxon and Chevron brought several climate-related proposals to the company's respective shareholder meetings recently and won majority support. At Exxon, activist investors got a majority of shareholders to support a resolution asking the company to provide an analysis on how a decline in fossil fuel demand would affect it, which should provide more insight into the company's plan to transition away from dirty burning fuel sources. Meanwhile, Chevron shareholders got the big oil firm to start measuring its methane emissions. Other good news is that various groups, legislative groups, are demanding to know where excessive profits are coming from as fuel prices, gasoline prices, soar at the pump. It's clear that the big oil companies are making more than ever, and it's not clear why they are charging more.
California often brings good news, and they have detailed some ambitious plans for wind. California is already leading the country in solar capacity, and it's looking to do the same with wind power. A roadmap for wind farm adoption presented by the California Energy Commission laid out plans for massive offshore wind turbine expansion that could bring tons of clean energy to the state. The plan includes adding 3 gigawatts of capacity from wind farms to the state's coast by 2030 and 10 to 15 gigawatts of energy generation by 2045. That would be enough power as many as 15 million homes with wind power.
At the same time, we were reminded by listener Bill Helmer this week that over in Nevada, solar companies are building huge wind solar farms and devastating parts of the desert, chopping down the Joshua trees, for example. We told Bill that we'll look into this and do a show on it in the very near future. Other good news, the Department of Energy made a major investment in carbon removal. We need to drastically reduce our carbon emissions, and one way to do that is just to straight suck the carbon out of the air, the same way the trees in the ocean do this. The United States Department of Energy is planning to kickstart this practice by using $3.5 billion from the bipartisan infrastructure bill to build carbon removal facilities. The core of the project will be building 4 carbon capture hubs that will each be capable of removing a total of 1 million tons of carbon dioxide per year from the atmosphere. Each plant will provide the equivalent relief of taking around 200,000 gas-guzzling vehicles off the road. Carbon capture is still a new technology, but the Department of Energy getting involved will likely spur lots of investments in the field.
This next story falls in the category of every little bit helps. Heinz will start packaging ketchup in sustainable paper. Plastic is recyclable in theory, but most of our plastic bottles don't get reused. They end up in landfills. So Heinz has a new plan. The company is going to fully sustainable by 2025 up in landfills. So Heinz has a new plan. The company is going fully sustainable by 2025, and part of its path will include launching paper bottles. That's right. The classic condiment will come in a bottle made from sustainably sourced wood pulp. Sorry, and will... Wood pulp, and will...
Certainly is a step in the right direction.
Yeah, except I can't seem to... okay.
It's easier than reading the back of a ketchup bottle.
Right, it is.
Fine print.
That's right. They'll be having paper bottles. That's right. The classic condiment will come in a bottle made from sustainably sourced wood pulp and will be fully recyclable. According to Heinz, the new packaging will reduce the carbon footprint of its bottles by as much as 30% compared to plastic and 90% compared to the glass alternatives. It's a major step in the right direction for a company that produces more than 650 million bottles each year. Let's hope that others follow suit.
Swiss scientists have notched a major fusion energy breakthrough. One path to sustainable energy production outside of more renewables is developing fusion power. While we're still likely a ways away from cracking this technology, a major breakthrough occurred recently that could help get us there. Scientists at the Swiss Federal Institute of Technology in Lausanne have discovered that ignition, the process of a fusion reactor generating more energy than was required to create the reaction, is possible. This could change the way fusion reactors are built and operated, opening up the possibility for new breakthroughs in the field.
Here's a response to corporations are people. An Indian court granted nature legal status. We personify the planet by referring to it as Mother Nature, but one of the highest courts in India has taken this even further. They've granted nature the same legal status as a human being. By doing so, the court has extended to the planet all of the protections that are afforded to a human, including a right to life. The case on its own may not have much meaning outside of India, but it's the latest in a series of rights of nature rulings that seek to extend protections to the environment that we often grant to people and corporations, for that matter. Other countries, including Bolivia, Ecuador, Panama, and New Zealand, have also provided similar protections. Let's hope that that moves to us.
A human rights commission in the Philippines has laid the groundwork for possible lawsuits against fossil fuel companies. For the last 7 years, the Philippines Commission on Human Rights has been looking into climate change, including its effects on what parties are responsible for causing it. The commission found that fossil fuel companies played a major role in the crisis, not only by producing massive amounts of emission that pollute the planet and result in rising temperatures, but also by blocking action that would address the issue. The report includes information that could be key to seeking lawsuits against big oil firms for their role in wrecking the planet.
We're making progress in the United States. It might be slow, but we're making progress. Clean energy hit 20% in the U.S. While oil and gas prices are rising disgustingly and unlawfully, clean energy has been picking up the slack at record levels. According to a new report published by global energy think tank Ember, the United States saw 20% of its energy production come from clean energy production for the first time ever, and this happened in April. This is a pretty big deal, honestly. First, it's a massive uptick from where the U.S. was last year when 14% of electricity was generated by clean power sources, and nearly fourfold increase from where we were just 7 years ago. But more than that, it puts U.S. on track for an essential benchmark. According to the International Energy Agency, one-fifth of electricity worldwide needs to come from clean energy sources. The United States has reached that mark early. Now we just have to sustain it.
Or expand upon it. We need 100% from clean sources. Airlines are trying to turn cooking oil into fuel. If you happen to be flying through Dallas, order some fries while you're at the airport, this article reads. You might just save the planet. I'm not totally on board with that beginning sentence. According to a report from local Dallas news station, NBCDFW, the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport is converting used cooking oil into a fuel source that can be used by the planes that are flying out of the travel hub. According to the report, McDonald's and other restaurants within DFW are saving their cooking oil, straining it out of their fryers, handing it over to the airport. It is then converted into sustainable aviation fuel through a process that adds hydrogen to create a mixture that can be poured into plane fuel tanks. The process could help make flights more sustainable, less harmful to the environment.
Portugal has launched a massive floating solar panel park. In Portugal's Alqueva Reservoir, two massive ships have set up shop. They are dragging two separate platforms that are the combined size of four soccer fields, and they contain nothing but solar panels set to soak up the sun and provide power to the country. The floating islands contain more than 12,000 solar panels in their array, making Alqueva project the largest of its kind in Europe. The farms, operated by Portugal's largest utility company, EDP, will generate enough energy to power 1,500 households. It's the latest in an attempt to get Portugal to 100% renewable energy by 2030, and the country is on track. 78% of EDP's electricity comes from clean sources now.
We're doing much better with livestock emissions. A new meta-analysis of studies published in the journal The Proceedings of the National Academy of Science found that if we just stick to the plans that we've already created, we can mitigate the methane emissions from livestock and keep warming beneath the 1.5 degrees Celsius target by 2030. We're still going to need to make some changes to maintain that progress into the future, but you can still enjoy an occasional burger at the cookout for now. The article does not say exactly what they're going to do with the methane emissions and how they will reduce the damage to the atmosphere. We'll stay tuned.
The European Union is getting serious about ditching Russia's oil. Russia's war on Ukraine has ramped up Europe's urge to kick the habit of counting on oil from the invading country. The European Union's European Commission announced a $205 billion investment plan that will help the region ditch oil, Russian oil, by 2027. Included in the plan, ramping up the clean energy production to 45% by the end of the decade, decreasing overall energy consumption by 13%, outright banning Russian imports. The outcome, if all goes well, will be a much cleaner Europe and, in turn, a much cleaner planet.
California had an almost entirely green day. On the last day of April of this year, a new era started in California. For the first time in history, the state ran entirely on clean, renewable energy. Well, almost. Officially, 99.87% of energy generated for electric usage came from renewable sources. That's an improvement over the Golden State's previous record set April 3rd, when it ran on over 97% renewable energy. Solar led the way, generating nearly two-thirds of the 18,000 gigawatts needed to meet demand. Wind, geothermal, and other renewable sources fulfill the rest. The achievement lasted just one day, but it's an impressive accomplishment nonetheless. California has set a goal of achieving 100% clean energy by 2045, and this marks a major step toward consistently achieving that goal, one day at a time.
We desperately need trains in this country. I was in the Bay Area last weekend, and it was packed in all parts of the Bay Area, from Santa Rosa to Half Moon Bay, from Santa Rosa to Berkeley, and if we had trains, we could take so much energy out of our system. Train travel in Japan is going completely clean. In Japan, you can hop a train in Yokohama, travel 16 miles to the Shibuya region of Tokyo, and ride back without creating any greenhouse gas emissions. This is possible thanks to the Tokyo Railways, which recently announced that its full-time line of trains in the region surrounding Japan's capital city now run entirely on clean energy sources. An estimated 2.2 million people ride in Tokyo's railways every day. By becoming the first train operator in Japan to go green, the company estimates that it will prevent 56,000 households worth of carbon emissions from entering the atmosphere. We'll take a
I was going to say, you are listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. We'll take a short break and be back with more good news, bad news.
Look at me, I'm a train on a track. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. Look at me, got a load on my back. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. Look at me, I'm going somewhere. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. Look at me, I'm going somewhere. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. Been a hard day, yes it has. Been a hard day, yes it has. Been a I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, I'm a chicken train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, chicken train, yeah. Look at me, I'm a train on a line, I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. For the very last time, I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. It's been a life that's long and hard. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. I'm going down to the baker's yard. I'm a train, I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, yeah. Been a hard day, yes it has. Been a hard day, yes it has. Been a hard day, yes it has. I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, I'm a chicken train. I'm a train, I'm a chicken train, chicken train, yeah.
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico, and we're looking right now at bits of good news, and these bits of good news provide models for other people who want to do more good things. They're small, sometimes citywide, sometimes statewide, but they're positive emissions control and emissions reduction and environmental health oriented. And so, Steve.
Turns out that telehealth is cutting down on carbon emissions. Remember when coronavirus first struck?
Yes.
How could we forget? Much of the world went into lockdown, ultimately leading to a short-term dip in greenhouse gas emissions. Well, it turns out we might be able to keep some of those emissions off the books for the long haul. New study found that the expansion of telehealth services is helping cut down on the amount of gas that we're burning to get to and from doctor's appointments. According to researchers at The Ohio State University, at their Wexner Medical Center, going to telehealth visits has saved 50 million miles of travel, 2.2 million gallons of gas, 25 tons of waste that would have been generated during the visits, and 17,500 metric tons of carbon emissions from entering the atmosphere. It turns out that making healthcare more accessible isn't just good for patients, it's good for the planet.
I think this is a really important one. We know, we've heard over and over again how destructive plastic is to the environment, how much of it is in the oceans, how it's being ingested by fish and other animals, and how we have it in our own bodies. But scientists have developed an enzyme that can eat plastic. More than 90% of plastic disposed of in the United States is not recycled. Instead, it ends up in landfills. We send more than 30 million tons of the stuff to waste facilities across the country every year, where it sits for hundreds of years and slowly decomposes while releasing harmful greenhouse gases. A hungry, hungry enzyme might change all that. Researchers at the University of Texas have discovered a plastic-eating enzyme variant that can break down plastic in as little as 24 hours. This could help cut down on the overflowing waste piling up at landfills across the country that results in plastics making their way into our waterways and doing harm to the environment. I want them to mass produce that enzyme and spread it throughout the world.
Just be careful not to get it into your synthetic fabric clothing.
Ooh.
It'll eat the clothes right off your body.
Uh-oh.
Buses and bike lanes have gotten a big federal push. Last year, the Biden administration passed a $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill. That money is starting to get dispersed, and one of the first big chunks of it will help to reduce carbon emissions. The Transportation Department is issuing $6.4 billion in grants that will be available to cities that want to fund projects to expand bike lanes, bus paths, and other forms of low-emission transportation. Cities looking to expand electric vehicle charging stations, expand rail transportation options, build new paths for pedestrians, and anything else that might make cities more navigable without requiring more gas can start applying for funds. The goal is to cut transportation emissions nationwide in half by 2030, and this funding will be a step in that direction.
The U.S. is finally planning to plug up harmful oil wells. There are thousands of oil and gas wells across the United States that are leaking methane. Sealing these abandoned sites would cut down on emissions of a particularly noxious greenhouse gas. The Biden administration is finally tackling this scourge, setting aside $4.7 billion to address the issue. That includes identifying the leaking wells and taking action to fix the problem. And if that's not enough all on its own, there's a nice little bonus. Finding and sealing these leaking wells will create jobs, as many as 120,000, in fact.
The Biden administration has also signaled big moves for renewables. Obviously, we have to kick our fossil fuel habit, and adopting clean energy alternatives is one of the best ways to do it. Latest report shows that the U.S. is doing just that. According to a report published by the Department of the Interior, the country is on pace to approve nearly 50 new wind, solar, and geothermal energy projects by the end of 2025. Those clean energy efforts will produce enough electricity to power as many as 9.5 million homes.
One of the things that I worry about a lot is what's going on with the oceans, and it's not only the huge amount of plastics that are in the ocean, but the fact that the oceans are beginning to acidify and the oceans are getting warmer. So our oceans are essential to our overall health and an overall ecosystem, serving as a major carbon sink and providing us with all kinds of valuable resources. Representatives from around the world are recognizing this and stepping up to protect them. At the Our Oceans Conference, hosted by John Kerry, the former Secretary of State, and current U.S. Special Presidential Envoy for Climate, Governments, and Organizations, pledged more than $16 billion toward initiatives to protect the ocean. A total of 410 commitments were made, all with the goal of keeping the oceans safe. Initiatives include funding for reviving barrier reefs, protecting endangered species, and increasing regulations on fisheries.
We do have to keep in mind, as we warned last week, that commitments are a little bit flexible in governmental politics. We hope these 410 commitments are not only made, but enacted. Other good news, coal usage is way down. There's perhaps no worse fuel source for the planet than coal, which burns dirty, pollutes the air at alarming rates, creates carbon emissions that warm the planet. Luckily, just about the entire world is shifting away from it. New data published by the Global Energy Monitor found that coal usage has been steadily declining across the globe for the last half decade. And 2021 saw the lowest level of reliance on this fuel source yet.
I'm starting to feel a little more optimistic, aren't you, Steve?
I am. I mean, again, as you're saying, these are all small items, but they indicate, too, that a lot of people know what's going on and are taking steps to do it. The big corps. I mean, even now, the coal companies are fighting the decline of coal. Big oil and big gas are looking for new sources. They're using the Ukraine war as an excuse to jack up prices at the pump and so forth. So we have to balance some of these efforts against the incredible power of global corporations to control what happens to us. That's my downer.
Yeah, I was trying to bring us up. But climate denialism has lost a big platform. There's a scientific consensus around that climate change, the consensus recognizes that climate change is real, happening now, and the result of human activity. Do you want to deny that reality? Well, you can't anymore, at least on Twitter. The social media site that has been in the news for other reasons recently implemented a ban on any advertisements that deny the reality of climate change. Misleading information about the topic can no longer be monetized or promoted through paid campaigns. Twitter might still be home to plenty of misinformation, but clearing out some of that climate denialism is a welcome change. Poco a poco.
Another news, good news about alternative energy. Wind beat out coal and nuclear energy for a day. On March 29, wind turbines created more energy than coal and nuclear energy combined over a 24-hour period for the first time ever. Just one day might not seem impressive, but according to Grist, wind turbines have only ever beaten out either coal or nuclear energy, never both at the same time. The new record signals that the U.S. is making progress when it comes to renewable energy.
The Paris Agreement might actually work. The Paris Agreement is by no means the world's strongest treaty, and yet researchers say we may be able to meet its goals of preventing global temperatures from increasing by more than 2 degrees Celsius. There are some caveats. Each nation has to stick to its pledges. That was what Steve was saying, that, there are commitments, but they got to be followed through, including those made as part of the recent Glasgow Climate Pact at the UN's COP26 summit. Still, it's a big improvement from where we were.
And I've been reading separately that it's a long shot that we would beat the 1.5 centigrade climate increase. If people really took the pledges seriously, we would not even have to worry about the 2.0 centigrade rise. Another good news bit, California, a model state, ran almost entirely on renewable energy. While these all-time highs, I think we read about this.
Right.
Let's skip that.
Well, I mean, yeah. California is building the world's largest wildlife bridge. In another win for California, the state will break ground on the Wallace-Annenberg Wildlife Crossing on Earth Day. This is really important. We had a show on, what was that?
P-28.
A mountain lion, yeah, who was able to kind of get across the, they have a huge range, and it was able to get across expressways, but most animals can't, and that means animals have lost their range and their ability to really be viable if they can't move. So this massive corridor will run across 10 lanes of Route 101 in Agora Hills near Los Angeles. With its construction, it will help safely support the many animals that live in and near the Santa Monica Mountains.
And I think there are parks on both sides of that bridge, so the critters will find it very comfortable to stay once they get across the expressway. Other good news, the Biden administration has restored some environmental regulations. We wouldn't call Biden necessarily a friend of the environment just yet. Well, we're quoting somebody else here. I would call him a friend of the environment, maybe not in terms of full action, but he's certainly not the enemy of the environment that the previous president was. This week, she said, what?
Well, the White House finalized a rule that will reverse some of Trump-era rollbacks of the National Environmental Policy Act.
According to the Associated Press, the restored regulations guide environmental reviews for major infrastructure projects like building highways and pipelines.
So we're going to take another little break. And this is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. And you're listening to some good news.
When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright, take the shine and be the light, live in life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright, take the shine and be the light, live in life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, when you see the sun is bright, take the shine and be the light, live in life and raise it high. Let me tell you about the one, thinking about the living sun, energy so powerful, wonder where it's coming from, never leaving, only spinning, feeding energy that's gleaming, giving life to planets, solar system, the body, one of many galaxies, universe, imagine this, every speck's a living species with its own reality, or here's a who, true, zoom in and out, bloom first the truth and let it shade you. See the people walking on the street, stressing out, hoping they see the truth, knowing what it's all about, finding answers to the question they always ask. We're tiny cells, particles, organisms, true, united with something special, big, enormous, huge. We got to play the tune and show the pick and tell the youth, the seventh sun, solar power, that's what I do, what I do, what I do, what I do. Keep it pumping every time I ride, feel divine. The energy inside is heating up, oh so high. Messenger from the core, always speak my mind. Solar power energy, only way to go. The time is right, when you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light, give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, and you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light, give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, and you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light, give it life and raise it high. When you know the time is right, and you see the sun is bright. Take the shine and be the light, give it life and raise it high. Be my words, we need the sun to save our earth and live some more. Giving power to the car and home, begin to heal the globe. Getting closer to the end, I see she hurts and won't take more. It's not the planet I'm concerned, humankind it just won't learn. Clear the road and pave it for a better day, a better place. The sun is giving life. Take the bread and eat with grace. Technology for smarter ways.
Okay.
We discovered that the microphones were on while we were discussing what we're going to
do. What we're going to do next. Okay, Steve.
Glad we didn't use any bad words.
Oh, we don't do that.
Here's the good news that I wanted to read about the polar bears, although it's mixed news. Polar bears have long been seen as a symbol of global warming's damaging impact on the natural world. The bears rely on Arctic sea ice to hunt seals, so its decline puts the species at risk of extinction. However, in a rare piece of hopeful news for the ice bears, scientists say several hundred in southeast Greenland have now adapted to hunt using freshwater platforms. Researchers found the animals were using ice that breaks off glaciers. Quote, they survive in fjords that are sea ice-free more than 8 months of the year because they have greater access to glacier freshwater ice, said University of Washington polar scientist Kirsten Laidra, the study's lead author. The findings from a research team based at the University of Washington open up the possibility that pockets of the species might survive despite rising temperatures. And as a side note, I'll say there is growing evidence that creatures can evolve, just not only in terms of their habits, but in terms of their genetics as conditions change. Evolution takes place a little bit faster than we thought.
Yes, but not as fast as it needs to, really. But yes.
One of the big questions is where in the Arctic polar bears will be able to hang on, said Dr. Laidra. I think that bears in a place like this can teach us a lot about where those places might be. They spent 2 years interviewing Inuit hunters who shared their ecological knowledge of the area. Then, traveling to the remote region using helicopters, they tagged the bears with satellite tracking devices, collected genetic samples. Dr. Beth Shapiro, geneticist and co-author of the study, said they observed the most genetically isolated population of polar bears anywhere on the planet. We know that this population has been living separately from other polar bear populations for at least several hundred years, she said. Dr. Shapiro said that these bears are not thriving. They reduce more slowly. They're smaller in size. She added that it is difficult to know whether this subpopulation are surviving because of genetic adaptations or a different response to a very different climate and habitat. There are said to be roughly 26,000 polar bears remaining. Polar bears are in trouble, Dr. Shapiro added. It is clear that if we can't slow the rate of global warming, that polar bears are on a trajectory to become extinct. The more we can learn about this remarkable species, the better able we will be to help them survive the next 50 or 60 years. We also read a story a month or so ago about polar bears being spotted on land, learning to forage on land, getting away from their traditional habitat of the ice floes. So they're smart critters. They might be in your garbage next month.
Well, that's optimistic. That was by Malu Corsino from the BBC News. And here's one that I want to read because this is pretty good news, too. And this is from a day ago. This award-winning essay from the British science writer Zara Hewson explores the hidden underground networks of fungi that are silently helping trees and plants to block carbon and combat climate change. It's the winner of the 2022 Association of British Writers Young Science Writer of the Year Award, and her essay explores a microscopic realm, Earth's fungi, fungal life support system. A 2016 study led by researchers from Imperial College London revealed that one particular type, ectomycorrhizal fungi, enables certain trees to absorb CO2 faster and therefore grow faster than others. This is known as the CO2 fertilization effect. These fungi live in the root system of a host tree. In a symbiotic relationship, fungi help the tree to absorb more water, carbon, and other nutrients. In exchange, the tree provides food for the fungi by photosynthesizing. Ectomycorrhizal fungi have been found to slow down the process of rotting. Decomposition breaks down all that locked away carbon and releases it into the atmosphere. So the fungi, in effect, have two methods of fighting global warming. Insights into the critical growth-boosting role of fungi have already been applied to agriculture. Seeding the soil with friendly fungus is considered a promising technology for future sustainable farming. Research conducted into planting one particular variety, Arbuscular mycorrhizal fungi, AMF, in soil has shown how it can not only help enrich soil fertility, but also reduce CO2 levels in the atmosphere. Using these fungi can also provide a more sustainable alternative to chemical fertilizers, which can run into and pollute nearby water sources. The benefit of so-called biofertilizers like AMF have resulted in the global biofertilizer market reaching a value of more than $2 billion. Switching from chemical to biological fertilizers does come at a financial cost. They're crop-specific. They generally do not boost crop yield as much and as quickly as chemical fertilizers. They are understood to be so much more beneficial to the soil and the environment, though, that in the UK, the government has developed a scheme called the Sustainable Farming Incentive. It aims to provide financial assistance to farmers who opt for more sustainable, nature-enhancing practices.
Here's some bad news, but it is not altogether surprising. From Concordia University comes a report that companies' use of renewable energy certificates masks inaction on carbon emissions. Many firms have set science-based targets to reduce greenhouse gas emissions to comply with the Paris Agreement. The goal, first adopted in 2015, is to keep temperature rises well below 2 degrees Celsius, preferably as low as 1.5 degrees Celsius. To help reach these objectives, large polluting companies purchase renewable energy certificates, a market-based tool. This is like carbon offset
yeah,
purchases. Right. The bearer owns a certain amount of electricity produced from renewable energy sources. This means that under existing emissions accounting standards, companies can report zero emissions for every megawatt hour of consumed electricity that they match with a purchased certificate. However, existing evidence shows that purchasing certificates is unlikely to increase the production of renewable energy. A new study published in Nature Climate Change argues that because these certificates generally do not reduce emissions, firms using them are overstating their climate mitigation claims. In one calculation, the researchers show how a sample of 115 companies between 2015 and 2019 reported a 31% reduction in emissions. A closer analysis of that claim reveals that without including the purchase of ineffective certificates, the actual drop was roughly 10%. Quote, this means that the certificates allow these companies to report a reduction that is three times higher than what they would otherwise be able to report, says the report's lead author, Anders Bjorn, a Horizon postdoc in the Department of Geography, Planning, and Environment. It's hugely problematic that companies can use the certificates to claim that they are following this very ambitious reduction pathway when, in fact, they're actually reducing it by much, much less.
This is an article that I want to talk about a little bit, a report that I want to talk a little bit about. It's from the University of Nevada in Reno, and it's from June 16th, and it says that off-season cattle grazing to help control fire danger from invasive cheatgrass. Cheatgrass, an invasive annual grass that has invaded Nevada rangelands, is responsible for much of the increasing wildfire danger in the Intermountain West. However, scientists at the University of Nevada, Reno, have discovered that fire danger can be reduced through the application of targeted cattle grazing in the dormant growing season by attracting the cattle with stations containing protein feed supplements. Quote, our work, this is Barry Pearman, a professor of rangeland science, our work establishes that protein feed supplements in the fall and early winter can attract cattle to locations dominated by cheatgrass, significantly reducing the standing fine biomass, fuel biomass, by more than 50% while making room for native grasses to grow. Barry Pearman, professor of rangeland scientists at the University of Nevada, Reno, said, this research builds and affirms other studies that show dormant season grazing helps control the dominance of cheatgrass. One of the greatest ecological threats to ecosystems of the Intermountain West has been and will continue to be invasive annual grasses. The non-native cheatgrass is the most problematic invasive annual grass at regional spatial scales. It is estimated that cheatgrass covers 11,000 square miles of the Great Basin, and it is the ecologically dominant species on more than 20% of the sagebrush steppe. Strategic supplementation provides a valuable tool to target cattle grazing at specific locations within cheatgrass invaded systems to reduce fine fuel buildup during the dormant season. This was a study published in Elsevier's. I'm looking at Steve like he can help me. He doesn't know what I'm talking about. Elsevier Journal Rangeland Ecology and Management. It is difficult. He made that up. It is difficult to concentrate animals in one place during spring for long enough periods of time to be of any use, Perryman said. However, cattle can be concentrated on cheatgrass during the fall using supplementation as a tool. Reducing the amount of cheatgrass fuel carryover may effectively reduce the amount of total fuel available during the next fire season. If several hundred pounds per acre of cheatgrass can be removed during the fall through cattle grazing, that is several hundred pounds that will not be added to the next year's fuel load. Managing supplemental stations placement and cattle grazing distribution near or bordering areas with high ecological value or social importance provides options for land managers to reduce fine fuels at targeted manager-defined locations. Strategically placed supplements can reduce the fine fuels at targeted manager-defined. Strategically placed supplements can reduce the cost of developing fence infrastructure, decrease fence and wildlife conflicts, and provide greater flexibility to change management locations depending on fluctuations in precipitation, cheatgrass biomass availability, and management goals. And I want to say a little bit more about cattle because I think they get a really... I agree that we all need to cut our meat consumption because it's not... In great quantities, meat is not a sustainable way to eat. But we've learned from the Savory Institute, and you can go to Alan Savory's website and learn how it's important to have animals on the land. Number one, to keep down the vegetation, but also grazing animals on the land generate the health of the land. And properly done can take up carbon, can sequester carbon. So outlawing cattle altogether is not a good idea. However, putting them in strategic places where they're moved from place to place in their grazing, where they don't overgraze, and where certainly they don't go to factory farms to be finished off, is really valuable to the environment. So I think I don't feel guilty about eating meat that is, and we have a meat farm, eating meat that is sustained, is grown sustainably and doesn't become a major part of our diet, I think is really important.
We also see on our farm, our son and daughter-in-law are very diligent about moving the sheep around. There's some in our front yard right now, which we delight in. It has transformed our land. We have just a minute left to say goodnight. We hope you enjoyed this bit of news item. Susan is raising her hands in dismay. What's the problem?
I wanted to play this song, so
go.
This is going to be our song.
That's it.
To say goodbye.
Thank you, cows, for giving us your milk. Thank you, cows. It's sweet and smooth as silk. It helps to give us calcium that helps our bones grow strong. Thank you, cows, for you this is our song. Thank you, cows. that you're divine. Thank you, cows. So grand and so bovine. Your cowbells ring like music. Your moos are right in tune. Thank you, cows, for all the things you do. Watoosies, Jerseys, and Exters, so many breeds stand so proud. We lift our voice in thanks to you.
Up next is North State Give and Take, and it's made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Cotton Party, offering contemporary women's clothes and accessories with an emphasis on natural fibers in the heart of downtown Chico. Cotton Party has been providing friendly service for over 30 years and is located at 337 Broadway Street. Cotton Party is grateful for your business and offers complimentary gift wrapping with each purchase. More information by calling the Cotton Party at 893-4923 and by The Printed Image, providing screen printing and embroidery in Chico since 1980. The Printed Image is open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. and by appointment. More information by calling them at 898-9525.